Pro Christmas special with me, Susan Harrison. On today's show, I interview Ian, one of Santa's lesser-known reindeers, about his autobiography, and we have a Desert Island Death Disc double from Gonald Bag and BB Babalicious. But first, our resident reviewers Hayley Danks and Ruth Goodchild review Christmas in its entirety.
Hello, ho ho ho, and a Merry Christmas season to you.
That's a good opening.
Oh, thanks, yeah. Ruth. It's me, Hayley Danks, here with Ruth Goodchild.
Hello.
And we're here to review Christmas.
Yes, Christmas.
In general.
Yes. Where should we begin? Where to begin?
Oh, where to start? To begin? There's so much. The highs, the lows, the ups, the downs, the yes. potential snow. Ugh. And what I would like is for global warming to take its course quite naturally and for it to become hotter and hotter in December until one is actually forced to wear shorts.
Exactly.
And a t-shirt.
Why not try the snow in July? You know, spin everything around.
Oh, I love that.
Turn it on its head.
Yeah. Yep.
Turn the seasons on their head.
Mm.
You know, try something different. That's what I'm saying. You know, because otherwise we just get this same seasons trotted out every year.
Yeah.
Well, we know what's coming next.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, Ruth, but I like to, like you say, mix it up. I like to have an advent calendar, which I open in July.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And then you open it, it melts, all of the chocolate's
melted yeah.
and you think, yes.
I'm
surprised by that.
Well, exactly.
Exactly.
For me, my July was significantly enhanced by bringing that little bit of inappropriate Christmas feeling within into the summer month.
Yes. Well, there's nothing I like more than recording all the Christmas programmes, not watching them for 6 months, and then cracking them out in the middle of summer.
Oh, yes. I love that, Ruth. And speaking of which, let's get to it and review the TV Christmas schedule.
Yes. Now, obviously, we've not seen any of these programmes, but I think that gives us a fresh perspective on them.
And nor do we intend to.
No, goodness me, watching television on Christmas Day. No, I don't even have a television.
Oh, I know. That's so like you, Ruth.
Well, I'm actually lying. I do have one, but it's just got a sheet over it. It's got sort of a doily on the top. So it's more sort of decoration than a utility.
Right, right.
You know.
I don't own one either because I watch things online. I just watch links from Twitter. If somebody's posted a link, a visual or audio link, I watch that. But I restrict my viewing purely to things that have been retweeted on Twitter.
Yes. Well, that's how to sift out the good stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. When you've got 3,000 followers,
Fourth
choice.
How, for example, what's the point of watching a half-hour programme, 45-minute, 60-minute programme, when I could watch a Vine that only takes 6 seconds?
Yeah.
All the quality's still there.
Oh, yeah. All the depth.
All the depth.
The story. You know, people think you need an hour, what say you, to flesh out a story. I say bull.
S-H-I-T. Exactly. I think that's just stringing out a 6-second idea across 60 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's have a look at what's on Christmas Day. So, Doctor Who, which is some sort of drama programme.
Yeah, I think from what I understand, it's sort of a geek chic thing.
Oh, right. Yes.
Nah.
So it's kind of, it's taking all those kind of nerdy things and turning them on their head and making them cool.
I think so.
Right.
I mean, I've never actually touched it with a 10-foot barge pole.
No, because why would you?
Why would I?
Why would you?
But I have had friends in the past who have enjoyed the odd episode. But I think there's a lot of, I think it provokes a lot of strong feelings amongst people.
I mean, strong feelings are good, but the strong feeling that I really like to have when I'm watching a programme is ambivalence.
Mm. Oh, yes, I know exactly what you mean.
Because you can watch something and think, oh, I really loved that.
Yeah.
But that's so simple, isn't it? It's too simple.
Simplistic.
Exactly. So I prefer watching sort of 14-part documentaries about a war somewhere, you know. And then I start to think, well, this is very interesting, but it's also quite tedious.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like torn. Mm. Torn between the two things. It's very important,
it's like
and
the
yet
war
I don't
itself.
Care. Exactly, exactly.
When I watch a television programme, I like to feel nonchalance.
Yes.
You know? So when I watch, I don't know, something about children being killed abroad, I like to sort of distance myself, you know. Like
maybe I'm physically sort of, watch it from a different room.
I do that. I
over
do
your
that.
Shoulder.
Yes. I stand just out of the living room door and watch it over my shoulder.
That's good.
You know, I like to think that I am creating alienation technique on myself.
Yes. The Frumdons effect.
The Frumdons.
By looking sort of through the serving hatch at a programme rather than actually being in the same room as it.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
I imagine when these programme makers make their programmes, they're thinking people are going to actually be in the room watching them.
No, I'm not going to
Go along that boring route.
No.
Subvert the television watching process.
Exactly, exactly. I'm not going to be a passive passenger. You know, it's not going to be opium for me, for my mass.
Exactly.
Oh no, Karl Marx can do one.
Exactly. Mm. So I think that's television covered.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Great.
Television.
So, like, for me, Christmas is about many things.
Mm-hmm.
It's about sort of the relentless duty
mm-hmm.
that one has mm-hmm. to attend family functions. You know,
yes.
I do spend a great deal of my year avoiding my family,
yes.
and it's the one time that I'm duty-bound to sit in
unable,
the same room.
Unable to avoid it any longer,
exactly.
So you have to relent.
Yeah.
Exactly. Who will be there at your Christmas do?
There will be my mother, of mm-hmm. course, and she will probably be doing the bulk of the cooking.
Yes. As she has done
for a great many years.
Decades, really.
Yes. And I think it's nice, because although I am a feminist, I don't want to sort of disrupt her routine by helping.
Exactly. Mm. No, that would be... I think she'd probably find it offensive if you tried.
Oh, she'd totally... She'd find it really annoying. So instead,
exactly.
I just like to bring some cheese straws.
That's good.
That's good.
Because I remember you saying that she does sort of tease you by saying, Hayley, can you please come and just score the bottom of these
sprouts?
But you kind of turn it on its head, back
I
on
do,
its head, and you go, because you know the real meaning behind that, which is, honestly, leave me to it.
Yes.
And so you turn it on its head and say, no, I'm just going to carry on sitting here.
Sitting here.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Eating
exactly.
roses.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes she'll say, oh, Hayley, could you for once in your life, for once in your adult life, do the washing up? And I say, but I know the real subtext is do not attempt to clear up or wash up, because I would find that offensive as a woman, as your mother. I am the maternal person here. And so instead I say, no, I'm very sorry, but I need to reply to my at replies.
Exactly. And then, because that's your job.
It's my job.
That's her job.
Her job.
Exactly. She knows where all of the cutlery goes.
Mm.
You know what to reply to Wired magazine.
Well, exactly.
Exactly.
I know which emoticons are useful in any given situation.
Exactly.
And that's the new feminism. She's
exactly.
She's in the old guard. And so, you know, that's my Christmas. I mean, you know what it's like? I mean, my dad's got dementia, which is really quite tedious and I think quite stubborn of him
exactly.
to sort of persist in this so-called illness. And it just makes things very long-winded.
Yes.
The cyclical conversations.
Trying to remember who you are.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, give it a rest.
For goodness sake.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about that is I remember you used to say that he'd forget to buy you a Christmas present even when he didn't have dementia.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really interesting because it makes one wonder whether actually this dementia started maybe 10 years earlier than he said it did, because he hadn't bought you a present for ages, has he? And yet, oddly, he'd got your older sister.
No, you're right. Yeah, year after
present.
Year, you know, Saskia would receive some great gifts.
Yeah.
And yet, for me, it'd be like, hey, sorry, I've forgotten, you know. And so, like, Saskia.
Yeah.
I mean, I do find it very tedious that she will turn up with her brood and persist in helping, even though Mum clearly doesn't want the help.
Yes.
And she will look
loading
after
the dishwasher, all that business. It's so done, and it's so rude, isn't it? I'm just going to walk into your house and help.
Help.
So patronising to the mother and father figures.
Exactly. Yeah, no, you're right. But I mean, for you, Ruth, I imagine you have a really idyllic, calm...
Well, you're right in that. In that I decided just to subvert the whole family Christmas thing.
Yeah.
And for the last 5 years, I've spent Christmas alone.
Yeah, that's right. I love that.
Yeah.
It's great how you just feel able to do that. You don't feel any emotional, you know.
No, exactly. And I like to sort of take it one stage further in that I just lock all of the doors. I don't have the television on. I don't, as I said,
I don't really
have the television.
It,
I just have the wireless for the morning, and then that goes off. And then I sort of sit quietly and just listen to the clock. And it's really, you know, that's the outside world saying, that's not how you should spend Christmas. And I just... to stick two fingers up at the world and say, well, that's how I'm spending my Christmas. Well, screw you.
I think a lot of people would be very envious of that.
They would.
A lot of people might say that they want to be surrounded by loving people who care about them, but I think that is, you know...
Like these.
Crowd of city workers on a Christmas outing.
I mean, look at them now. They look happy. They're hugging one another.
It's
all a front. It's all a front. That's what I'm. It's exactly what I mean.
I mean, I love the idea of your Christmas. Mm. I mean, you know, I remember walking past your house on Boxing Day the other year,
and you had
actually painted your windows black.
Yes, because
which I thought was wonderful.
Everyone else in the street had done the little white snow things in the corner, and I thought, right, how can I take that and subvert it? Mm. And I took black paint across the whole window.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really nice. And I loved what you did with your Christmas cards. I mean, I say cards plural as a joke. I loved it that you wrote one card to be shared by all of your colleagues.
And then I just signed it as with my email address.
Great.
You know, because I think that's quite personal.
I think it's personal yet classy. You know,
exactly.
You are a businesswoman.
I'm saving the trees at the same time, but you can reply to me at this address.
Yeah.
You know,
that was really nice.
I put a kiss.
Yeah.
I put one X.
I was really surprised by that, Ruth.
Well, I had to build up to it, but, you know, I felt, give them one thing that they want, I suppose.
Yeah, a compromise.
Exactly. And I'm nothing if not someone who compromises.
Oh my God, I know.
But, you know, it's not my Christmas alone. You know, it's quiet. Like you say, it's idyllic.
Yeah.
But it's not without its tradition.
I think
parlour games are important. So I do a little bit of that into the mirror.
Right.
So it's like, you know, charades, that sort of thing. I'll even do something more modern, like Pictionary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I always win.
Oh.
So I'm very good at it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So how long would you say you spend about approximately an hour on each of these activities?
Well, maybe, I think overall maybe 3 or 4 hours just doing, I think I played 2 or 3 games in that time. You know, Cluedo
Word at a Time Story.
Exactly.
How does that go?
It goes great.
It's quite
sort of, because I never know what's going to happen next.
It's the element of discovery and surprise.
Yeah, what am I going to say next? I don't even know.
It's amazing. I must say, I was really touched that you returned the present I bought for you.
Well,
I just thought that was so out there, so Ruth.
Yes, it is. Well, it is. And I just thought, I don't need or want this, so I'm sure if I give it back, she can find someone who does need or want it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because I've repackaged it.
And re-gifted
it to Saskia. Good.
There you go, perfect.
It's great because I didn't want to spend any money on her. And now I can sort of, when I give it to her, I can imagine that it's sort of, you know, that I've given it to you, which indeed I literally did.
You literally did do that. Why would you want to spend money, though, anyway? Because Christmas is so commercial.
Well, it shouldn't be about that, should it?
I
mean, I don't know why I thought a Neil's Yard gift set would be a good idea. I suppose I thought it might be sort of ironic.
I think it must have been suckered into this sort of commercialisation of Christmas.
Yeah.
It's such a shame.
Yeah.
I like to spend no money on anyone, and I extend that throughout the year.
That's a good policy.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really good. And also, you might say, well, then you can spend your time. Well, my time's very precious, I need most of it for myself.
Yeah, but then when you do give something,
it really means something.
Exactly. It's like, this for me is a gift.
Exactly.
Your presence is
a present.
The other thing about Christmas is the little trinkets, the tidbits, which are so British.
They're so British.
I like it because it's sort of, I find it all ironic. I look at it all through a prism of
Christmas
irony.
Christmas jumpers.
Even the
hilarious.
Glitter, you know.
If I see someone wearing a Christmas jumper, I know that person is
very funny.
Very funny and quirky, and I want to spend time with them.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know.
Which for you would be a massive sacrifice.
Exactly.
So, alongside these trinkets and whatnots, we've got a couple of crackers, and we're going to review them.
Okay. Shall I take
this one? Ruth, you might not have done this before. So
what do I have to do?
So, what you have to do is you have to pull one end. Let's see if we can do this. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, great. So now,
gunpowder.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Now inside, there's
It's already appealing to all my senses because the noise and then the smell of the gunpowder and the feel of the different articles inside, the texture of the different articles. So interesting. So it's sort of multi-sensory.
It is.
Plaything.
It's a plaything. Yes. And what I'll do, I mean, this won't surprise you, but what I'll do when I go home is I will reconstitute this cracker and make it into a tabard.
Okay.
So it's sort of very flimsy.
It is. I was going to say, that's not going to stand up to a sort of buffeting in the wind, is it?
No. This is quite an interesting concept. This is for fun.
I'm sorry, can you explain?
Yeah, sure. It's sort of like for entertainment value, not for any sort of practical purpose.
Oh, right. So it's a sort of purple cylinder.
Yeah. I mean, you could say it's a purple cylinder, or you could say it's a hat. A funny...
Right.
A funny... It's very English.
Is it keeping you warm?
No.
Okay. How fascinating.
Yeah, really fascinating.
Really fascinating.
Now, inside, we've got what Mom might call a gift, but is a very, very stingy gift.
It really is. Let's explain
this. Even by cracker standards. So this is a panel of four stickers.
One says Merry Christmas with a wreath. One has a sort of fat man wearing...
Yes. Now, Ruth...
What's that?
Now, this man is quite iconic. He is like a sort of symbol of Christmas, and he's called... Father Christmas.
Okay.
Sort of like the father of the festival.
Father of the Christmas.
The father of the festival. Okay.
Right. So sort of like Jesus. Sort of like Jesus. Okay. And then some drawings of some gifts. And who's that chap?
So this chap. So I don't actually know, but...
It just looks like a gnome. And I'm unsure as to the connection.
Yeah, but I'm sure that there is a connection because, you know, why would one go out of one's way to draw a gnome?
Right.
If it wasn't relevant. Yeah, sorry, I find it a bit emotional. Sorry. Okay.
It is. Christmas is an emotional time.
Yeah, it's really stressful, you know?
You know, and this cracker is appealing to the emotions. Bang! So already I'm shocked.
Gosh.
And now a present. Yeah. Oh, I'm feeling touched.
Yeah.
So it's appealing to all the emotions.
No, you're right. Yeah. And like the separation when one pulls the cracker, it's that feeling of being separated from you know, in my case, being separated from my independence.
Yes.
To have to spend time with my parents.
Yes.
Know. Anyway, so finally now, this will fascinate you, Ruth.
Right.
This is a small slip of paper which has what's commonly known as a joke on it.
Okay.
Now it's posed as a question.
Okay.
What do hedgehogs have for lunch?
Well, I know you shouldn't give them milk. You should give them water and some bread. So I imagine that must be the answer.
Okay. So Ruth, this is less a literal question and more a joke.
Okay.
The answer is not what one might expect.
Right. I'm with you. I'm with you. Okay. So what do hedgehogs have for lunch? And it's a joke, you say.
Yeah. You're going to love it.
Okay, go ahead.
Prickled onions.
Ah, so that's a typo, isn't it?
Oh, no. So this is deliberate. This is what's known as wordplay. I think the problem is that you're used to a much higher calibre of wordplay. So for you, though, this would be... written in Latin and have
I'm surprised they're just handing it to us by having it in English anyway.
Here it is. I knew that's how you would see it. It's for the layman and the laywoman.
Oh, I see. Right, okay. I understand. I understand now. Excellent.
So,
okay,
So that is essentially a cracker.
That's a cracker, right. Well, I enjoyed that experience very much.
Yeah, what would you mark it out of 10?
Oh, good question. I think I'm not going to go for 10 because, you know, there are things it can improve on, definitely.
Yeah. You want to give it somewhere to go.
Exactly. Mm. I'm going to give it an 8 because I was amazed at the sound it made and I like the texture of the material, but I think... this aphorism could have been, as you say, of a higher calibre, and I didn't really understand the stickers.
For me, the stickers really let it down.
They really did.
For me, I would go for a 7 because...
Okay.
What I'm actually going to do was when I make my tabard mm-hmm. out of cracker material tomorrow, I'm going to implant some of these stickers upon it and then review it again in a new light.
That's good. So you've taken some basic elements and you mix it up and make something even better out of it. Like Andy Warhol or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Take something that's already happened.
Yeah, it's already
happened. And then turn it into something new and fresh and exciting.
Yeah.
Of a higher calibre.
Well, exactly.
Well done.
That's right.
Well done.
No,
what a great idea.
So, I mean, to sum up Christmas in general, you know, Christmas 2014, bearing in mind our individual experiences of it, the television schedule, the tidbits.
I can't give it any more than a 5.
No.
I'm afraid.
For me, I mean, you are hard to please, Ruth. For me, I would go to a 6.
You're going to go to a 6. Well, that's very generous.
But only because I find it a very useful opportunity to catch up on my Twitter admin on the actual day itself.
So, that's understandable.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Young, and you're listening to Desert Island Death Discs, where we ask castaways to choose one song that they hate so much they would choose to live on a desert island to avoid hearing it ever again. In this special Christmas episode, we've got two celebrities for you from the worlds of sport and entertainment. Gonald Bagg is the UK's top thumb athlete. 3-time winner of the prestigious Cromwell's Madhouse Totally Bonkers Thumbs Up Trophy, he has wowed thumb fans throughout the UK with his athleticism and his thumbs up attitude. This is his Desert Island Death Disc.
I don't get music. As an athlete with a 24/7 training regime, I don't have time for airy-fairy stuff like xylophones and the imagination. But I know what music I do like, and that's fast music. I also know what I don't like. My Desert Island Death Disc is Tina Turner's Simply the Best. Why? It was the theme tune to my competitor's Olympic bid. It was the summer of 2006, yeah. The Olympics had decided to add one new discipline to the next games, and thumb sports was in the running, yeah. Who else was up for it? You guessed it. Gary Fenton and the Rock, Paper, Scissors Federation. It's ridiculous. It's not even a sport. But we had a lot going for our bid. Sure, we had the usual naysayers saying things like, thumb sports? Oh, that's just a stupid kids game. But what you've got to remember is it's not. It's not. RPS, that's a kids game. Now, we were pretty confident. We had already lined up lucrative sponsorship deals with global mitten brands such as Matalan. We had the teenage market wrapped up as well. They love thumb-based activities, don't they? Yeah, texting, gaming, hitchhiking, that sort of thing. The other thing to remember is we're the only sport with 100% thumb use in play. Something I didn't think would go unnoticed by the Olympic Committee. Rock, paper, scissors, for example, only has 66% thumb use. Scissors doesn't even get a look in. But best of all, thumb sports promotes all the same values as the Olympics. Respect, yeah? Discipline, hand health. All I'm saying is, unlike the other entrants, thumb sports is a gentleman's game. You don't see me stealing Gary Fenton's wife. Anyway, come August, at a big ceremony, they opened the envelope. And before they'd even announced the winner, theme music played. When I heard Turner's voice and saw Gary Fenton's smug, smiling, mustachioed face, I knew we'd lost. 3 years of prep and a marriage right down the drain. If I never have to hear a Tina Turner song again, it will be too soon, yeah. Can actually still affect a match if I see anyone in the crowd with big hair.
I had the absolute pleasure of talking to the charming and affable reindeer, Ian, about his autobiography, Reining It In, which is available in all good bookshops.
Hello, Ian.
Hi.
Now, Ian, we don't often hear about you. The focus is usually a bit more on Rudolph. How do you feel about that?
I'm very comfortable with that because I prefer to be out of the limelight. Mm-hmm. But I'm very grateful for the service I provide. And I'm very happy for Rudolph and his red nose to absorb most of that attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that you're fine with that, because obviously you have brought out an autobiography just in time for the Christmas sales, which kind of indicates maybe you're not fine about that.
I just wanted to say, hello, I'm here, just wave my hoof and go, you know those other reindeer you see on the Christmas card and stuff? We also have a voice and we exist. And just, I guess, not to be not to be forgotten. You know, I'm happy to be out of the limelight, but at the same time, I want my existence to be recognised, and I hope that's not presumptuous or arrogant.
No, I don't think so at all. I think that's really lovely, actually. And that's a really nice sort of message for Christmas, actually, as well, to really value those people around you. I'm sure that Santa does value you. Mm. And I've got to say, it's been a rip-roaring read. I've really enjoyed every second of it. There's some jolly japes. You know, what would you say was your favourite anecdote? Probably the one where you were getting into trouble. The chimney incident was quite a favourite.
Yeah, we got chased by a dog who made its way onto the roof. Mm-hmm. And it bit Rudolph's nose. And obviously, you're trying not to wake up the kids, the family. And it was chaos. he was screaming. And so we almost, you know, we were in danger of waking up the street. And, you know, once the spell is broken, if anyone sees us when we're in action, we would all simultaneously implode. Those are the rules. And we were in serious danger of that. So that was a very tense, but, you know, we all found it quite funny moment.
Yeah, I guess you sort of have to laugh through that because the stakes are so high for you. So, I mean, that's a pretty stressful job. Do you get well rewarded for that? Or do you have good health benefits? And
I think the more taxing a job, the more its innate reward. So we're obviously providing an important service. The dangers involved in it make it that much more exciting and emotionally fulfilling.
Oh, wow. So just, I don't want to upset the listeners too much, but in terms of the imploding, I mean, I've never witnessed that. I know that, sadly, you witnessed it with one of your good friends, Blitzen, was it?
Yes.
How does it actually manifest itself? What do you see when the imploding happens?
The head, the skull caves in on itself, and then the torso as well. The legs suck up into the body. The tail is absorbed by the anus. You almost existentially consume yourself. It's obviously something that's beyond normal rules of nature. It's very strange, but you're sort of engulfed by your own energy.
Wow. Yeah. So when the tail is consumed by the anus, then the anus turns inside out?
Yeah, your anus becomes the black hole through which you are consumed. You are consumed by yourself. It's a very unusual thing. And at Christmas, you know, it's supposed to be a time of cheer. So when that happens, if you are spotted by a child who might be across the road looking out of his window and sees you, before you know it, you're being ingested by your own anus in a split second. I mean, it's over very quickly, but you cease to exist, but it happens in a very unpleasant way.
And for that child, they would obviously be scarred for life.
Yes, it's very disturbing for the child. Obviously, nobody believes them, which is good for us because we don't want to draw attention to ourselves any more than we absolutely have to. But again, these are the risks we live by, and those risks make the job rewarding.
Ian, you're incredibly zen. It's really lovely spending time with you, actually. You have this really calm presence, which I don't think can be said of Rudolph. I mean, how do you react to his allegations in the press that you were, have plagiarised his anecdotes and stories and tales?
I have to put that down to his own egomania. What he calls plagiarism, you know, we'll all be in the hut talking about what's been going on, recanting stories, everyone's saying everything. I don't think you have ownership over these stories. I mean, to call it plagiarism is silly. And he acknowledges that. I mean, he knows he goes too far. But yeah, it can be, it's a shame. I mean, he's a friend, but I think we've all got those friends that are a kind of a loose cannon. And one day you go, why is he my friend? He's a bloody idiot. And then the next day, you know, he brings you a berry or something and you go, that's why he's my friend. You know, it's one of those turbulent relationships that somehow seem to complement each other. I don't know.
It's remarkably forgiving of you. You're right. I mean, we do all know people like that. We all have people like that in our lives and we kind of turn a blind eye, I guess, especially when you've known them since you were a baby, which presumably you have. I mean, you guys you guys all grew up together, didn't you? So
we did, yeah. We went through Santa's Academy together.
Yeah.
We were both plucked from the same forest. Mm-hmm. And so we go back a long way. He's always been very competitive. But that's fine, as I say.
Do you think he sees you as a threat? Your recent relationship with Dancer was pretty well documented. Is that something that perturbs him? I know that they used to be very close.
It might, but when a relationship's over, it's over. I mean, you know, if he ended the relationship with Dancer, and if he chooses to complain about it because Dancer and I are now together, then that's his problem. He shouldn't have made that choice. So he's creating his own suffering.
Wow. Hmm. And what is it that attracted you to her in the first place? What sort of stuff do you like doing together?
We will go and look for berries. We dare each other to bite a vole. We'll find...
What happens when you bite a vole?
Oh, we're obviously herbivores, mm-hmm. So we were wondering, let's try out being a carnivore. And we don't want to eat them. Mm-hmm. Our bodies may not be able to digest a vole, but we thought, what if we could at least bite one or another kind of or another animal? And it's just a little dare. We don't want to hurt the animal. It's just, you know, in the same way that a creature may pick up its young in its mouth.
Yeah.
It's that kind of holding it. You hold the vole in your mouth. And uh-huh. We were seeing how long we could hold a vole for in our mouths. So we play games like that in the forest. And
how long can you hold a vole for in your mouth?
I held one for about 3 minutes once.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really fun.
That's great.
Yeah. I've tried holding other creatures as well. But
oh, yeah?
Hmm. Yeah, no, we did, obviously, we couldn't get it in the mouth, but we did a badger,
mm-hmm.
and actually a fish.
Oh, wow, yeah. With water as well, presumably.
Yeah, yeah, so the water was there and it was dripping.
Yeah.
You don't want it to suffocate, but no. You hold it, and if you ever hold a fish in your mouth, just the way it moves, so funny.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously right, it's suffocating, so, you know,
yeah.
It's not funny, but it's... It feels very funny. So we did that for a while.
That's brilliant.
A salmon.
A salmon. A salmon, mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for the specificity.
Yeah.
So your book is out in hardback at the moment, just in time for Christmas, which is fantastic. And there's a few. I love the quotes you got on the back. The most fun I've had reading a book ever, Louis Spence. I mean, yeah. That's a great quote. Are you good friends with Louis?
I don't know who he is.
Okay. And another quote from Father Christmas, the second best reindeer I've ever owned. That's lovely.
It is lovely. And it's partly him. He loves us all the same.
Yeah.
I think. I genuinely believe that. But mm-hmm. It's nice that he... I like that he puts it like that. It's very sweet.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
And who would be your ideal customer? Like, if you could choose the sort of person you'd like to buy your book and mm-hmm. devour it with their eyes?
That's a very good question. I mean, obviously, you want children
mm-hmm.
to be able to identify with you as a being, not
yeah.
as just a sort of a fun character. So
mm-hmm.
those who haven't thought about reindeer beyond the Christmas card portrayals.
Do you find those portrayals slightly offensive, borderline racist?
Sometimes, I wouldn't say racist, but you do get ones where they're sort of comedy ones and maybe the reindeer has taken a shit or is...
Masturbating. Doing...
Yeah, you get somewhere there. There's crude ones where the reindeer are masturbating or being masturbated by Santa or something like that. Mm-hmm. My sense of humour doesn't extend that far.
Does your sense of humour extend?
I mean, it pretty far.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will put some milk in the evening maybe on Rudolph's nose so that a hedgehog will bite it. I'll play pranks like that. Yes, we put cling film over Santa's toilet one Christmas. And
that is very funny.
I like to have a drink. I like to be silly, but yeah, I think I don't you know, drawings of me masturbating. Does anyone, do you want that?
Definitely not.
Well, there you go. I think a reasonable level of humour.
Yeah. Reasonable, I think, sums you up, Ian. It's such a pleasure to talk to, you know, a celebrity, a real stalwart of Christmas who's so grounded and has really, you know, got his hooves on the ground. It's lovely.
Thank you. And obviously, I'm behind this veiled curtain here so that I don't implode, because obviously if you were to physically see me, that would happen. But I'm glad we could agree on those safety conditions before the interview and that you were happy to go along with that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, for your sake, but also mentally, I don't want to be left with an indelible image of utter destruction and chaos and associate that with Christmas forever. So I think it's great for both of us.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
So, listen, thank you so much, Ian, for talking to us. And have a very happy Christmas.
Thank you very much, you too.
Actress, singer and entertainer, Bebe Babalicious is the longest surviving star of vaudeville. Not without controversy, she once ate a dog during a key change, and unaccustomed to modern technology, we spoke to her via her landline from an undisclosed location. This, via the telephone, is her Desert Island Death Disc.
Hi there, this is Bebe Babalicious, actress, singer, entertainer, the only woman to have urinated on stage during a duet with Beyoncé. Hi there. My mouth doesn't work anymore ever since I had the left side of my jaw replaced with coal. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Anyway, the song that I wish never to hear again is the Venger Boys' We Like to Party. 1998 was terrorized by this tragedy. New York to San Francisco, I believe, is what they used to say. Jumping around in what I can only describe as a synth nightmare. This song is honestly makes my heart fail and gives me palpitations. I mean, if you just look at the lyrics, they repeat the words, we like to party, as if you're 14 again and trying to prove how cool you are. The idea that they're going from New York to San Francisco is horrifying. They're traveling the length of America. They're going everywhere. Nobody can escape the Venger bus. It's going all the way across America. And if you get in its way, it will mow you down.
You've been listening to Susan Harrison's Back Row with Gemma Arrowsmith, also featuring Andrew Gentili, Chris Gow and Alison Thea Scott. Theme music as ever by Amy and Matt from Skiffle and the Piffles. Merry Christmas! Bye! Merry Christmas! Have a nice time! Bye! Jingle bells.